The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to Macro, Micro and Small Cap News on, what is it, Saturday, 4th of July, American Independence Day. And Taylor Swift's getting married as well. It's exciting, isn't it? Do you know, I look at those things on TV, think, who cares? See all those people queuing outside, see glimpses of celebrities. I think, people, they are just people like you. They are only people. Why are you standing out? It's a heat wave in America, New York at the moment. Why are you standing out there looking for a glimpse of another person? It's only a person. That's all it is. Nuts, aren't they? Anyway, 4th of July, 2026. And we're in Q3 now, of course. By the way, at the end, is it September or July? End of July, I think it is. Yeah, less than a month left. If you want to get 40% off the Share Pickers Investment Club, you can do it right now. Just go to the website there, sharepickers.com, and use the code POD40. If you've got any questions about that, you get 40% off, then just email me, justin@sharepickers.com. You go to the website, you can see exactly what you'll get for you. Basically, you get £100 off normal sort of membership fee for a year. It's £249, but you can get it for £149, and that's going to end at the end of this month. Okay, so pod, that's P-O-D 40, 4-0, the number. Pod 40, okay? And you get 40% off, and as long as you keep renewing as well, you get 40% off the rest of your life. But that ends at the end of this month, okay? It's just a summer special, a heatwave special. Oh, yeah, prices are hot. Discount is hot. Okay, I'm going to look at today the best and worst performers of the week on the website. Now, listen, if you're looking for small microcap stocks that are profitable, which generally are the key ingredients to, you know, long-term sustainable rises. Yes, you get pop and drop stocks, but these are based on news, and normally the share price shoots up, shoots back down because they're not profitable and they have to raise money, all that stuff. So if you want to see, you know, the best performers over a long period of time are profitable companies. And that's why it takes a bit of risk out of it as well, because, of course, companies that are not profitable or loss-making have to raise money. And what you don't want to do is be holding a company that's going along nicely, and all of a sudden they come out with a 20% discount fundraise and pulls the carpet from under your legs. Now, with profitable companies, there's less of a problem with funding, of course. There's that funding risk with loss-making companies. So while you can get some good pops on loss-making story stocks, they're not the way, if you're looking for, to build up long-term sort of wealth, you're better off investing in these more stable, profitable companies that can go on to be 10 baggers. But it just takes time. Just takes time, that's all. Anyway, so I look at the best and worst performers of the week. On the website, like I said, these are companies sub 300 million market cap that are profitable or forecast to be profitable by brokers and the guidance, etc. So, hopefully they don't have companies that are forecast to be profitable will not have funding issues. I'm going to look at the markets, look at the indices, gold, silver, oil and Bitcoin. Also, there's just been the big bit of news dropped on El Nino. I covered this last week, I think the week before last, and how you can get exposure to this. It's going to be a strong one, which was the sort of prediction, but it's sort of almost official now, and the stats, the probability of it being a strong El Nino means it'll hit, harvest, crops, all that stuff, supply of key ingredients there, and key foods, and that means the prices will go up, which of course means, I know it's quite a miserable situation, but as an investor, you're always looking for ideas, means that the prices of certain commodities will go up. I'll tell you how you can get some exposure to that. It's not investment advice, but, if you do your research. I also want to look at a company I hold that, I don't have a huge amount of stock. I wish I had more, actually. I've been saying it for a long time. I wish I'd bought more of this because I think it's going somewhere. This is a company with the owners have really big ambitions, and they've done some very shrewd deals, and they've transformed the company basically since they came on board in 2020. And I think it's really worth looking at. The Sharp Operators, in fact, I may be interviewing one of the guys from there. I just connected with him on LinkedIn. And in fact, I interviewed him when he first took over back in 2020, I think it was. But it'd be nice to catch back up with him. Anyway, let's look at the markets first of all. Let's look at the indices, best and worst performing. So for the year to date, these are worst performing two best performing. So AIM Alshire, worst performing, 1.44% up. Well, at least it's not in the red. FTSE 250 is next, of course, because of domestic economy and the politics and all that stuff and cost of living crisis, bills, energy, all that. You know, FTSE 250 are domestically focused, you know, companies listed in the UK, and they're suffering a bit, up 4.22%. Saying that, you know, you get more investing in that than you would putting your money in a savings account in the bank. So, you know, it's doing okay. I think it'll get better as long as interest rates don't go up now and Andy Burnham doesn't do something stupid to businesses. But I think he may have learned a lesson from what Rachel Reeves did. It's now coming out, isn't it? They made mistakes. What's that guy's name who got sacked? The ginger guy. McSweeney, I think it was. He did an interview saying, yeah, they were too doom-mongering at the start. They kept talking the economy down because they had to do that big sort of raise and raise taxes, which was ridiculous. I mean, Labour don't understand. If you want to improve the general, you know, society, living standards of everyone in society, you enable business because that's where tax comes from. Now, you don't strangle them, you help them thrive. That way, they'll employ more people. Those people will come off claiming benefit and they'll be taxpayers. So you're flipping the economic, you know, status of that person straight away. And it transforms that person's life. They spend more in the economy gets better. What did Labour do? The opposite. They just saw business as a cash cow. And what's really bad here, and I think, is that they cozied up the business beforehand, saying, you know, they're going to help business. And they came in and whacked them with three or four, you know, taxes and regulation. Like, business is not just a cash cow. Business should be the centre of everything, every policy that any political party makes in regards to this country, because that's where it stems from. That's where the money comes from. You protect business. You help them get on. And the rest of society will thrive. Your debt will go down as a government, everything. Labour just don't understand that. All they want to do is, you know, oh, it's so unfair that people are doing well when other people are not. Isn't it unfair how people working hard get rewarded? No, it's not. That's the reward. That's how it works, okay? Yes, but what about lazy Colin? He hasn't got anything. Well, he's not working. That's why he's not trying to work. Let's give him some more benefits to make it more fair. That's the way Labour works. I have no idea, do they? Anyway, God, that just all stemmed from the FTSE 250. So FTSE Small Cap up 5.61%, FTSE 100 up 7.26%, Stock 600 in Europe 8.76%, S&P 500 up 9.32%, Dow Jones up 10.06%, FTSE All World Index up 10.14%, and NASDAQ up 11.15%, but the top of the tree there is the small caps in America. It's the Russell 2000 up 20.72%. That's flying, isn't it? Let's have a look at silver and gold. Had a bit of a rally yesterday, but I wouldn't get back into these. People, you know, people looking at gold now, you're late to the party. I've gone back and looked at gold, the performance of gold over the last, in fact, I'll do it right now. I'll put on a weekly chart. And you often find when gold performs and it goes parabolic, it literally takes years to get back, you know, to break that level again. I mean, it happened back in the 80s. It went up to $888 an ounce, and then came back and went in a range from 82 to September 2004. In the range, it did get, you know, it went up and down, but didn't really break that new high until, well, 2008. And then in 2008, it shot up again, spiked out at 1,900, and that was September 11th, 26th of September 2011, and then it didn't get it back above that level until 2020, so another 9 years. And this happened a lot, and the last spike, really, before the recent one, was in August 2020. It got up to 2,130, so 2020, and it didn't break that to 2024, so 4 years. So I think that's going to happen again with gold. I don't see there's any reason to get into gold right now. No rush to get into gold. Like, it doesn't pay a dividend. And yeah, I missed it. You know, a lot of people didn't miss it. They did very well with gold. But I, for one, and in fact, what was quite annoying is I used to be talking to John Mayer, who was obviously commodities and resources broker. And I was watching the breakout back in, where was it? It sort of broke out. Yeah, it sort of broke out in, for the recent run, in April 2024, broke about 2000, 100. I said, well, this is going. I think it's going to go 3,000, John. And he actually ended up at 5,400. But now I think it's a sideways play for a long time. There'll still be a range, there'll be a bit of trading opportunities, but not like the run we've seen so far or recently. So I wouldn't bother looking for gold at the moment, stocks. And I think you'll have to go sideways. It's only now just, it's down below the 200-day moving average. It's only now just trying to make its way back up to the 20-day moving average, which sometimes if you break above that, it's quite an early indicator, but you could say maybe the bottom has been found, but I wouldn't rush. Like I said, it can go sideways for years. Where is oil at the moment? Brent crude? It's the first little bounce on Friday. It wasn't a bounce, really. Just flat. But it's amazing where this has gone, isn't it? It's gone from $120 a barrel in April 26 down to now $70. That's a heck of a fall. In fact, what's that in percentage terms? Let's have a look. Down 40%. As I'm saying, this should help. Now that oil price is coming down, yes, there'll be some temporary sort of price shocks around, but now that's coming down, inflation, you can see through any price hike, any supply shock, you can see that inflation may not be a problem. Having said that, El Nino is on the way, and that may not be a good thing. And I'll talk about that a bit. What's up with Bitcoin? I said Bitcoin's struggling, isn't it? But it is. I mean, it keeps hitting around about $58,000. This is so. Like I said, this has come down from a long way. It hit us a peak of $126,000 in October, and it's fallen by 50% to $62,000. But it does try to keep breaking, or hits that 57,000 level and bounces. So maybe that could be a bottom. I know Saylor is in trouble. I honestly think the man is... I mean, he went bust before. Michael Saylor, of course, the biggest Bitcoin treasury company, but now he's playing like a yield of like 13% or something ridiculous on his preferred shares, which you can't afford because he's underwater on his Bitcoin holding. But it's just nuts. I don't see how that's a business model. If that crashes, and of course he's selling the odd Bitcoin. We said he'd never sell. He kept saying he'd never sell one Bitcoin, and he's selling some Bitcoin. But if strategy crashes, then the crypto market will just tank. All of it will tank. If you don't know Michael Saylor, look him up. He's an insane, Bitcoin evangelist who's gone through before. He went big as well in the dot-com bubble, and his stock collapsed pretty much. So he's got a track record of really going to the extremes. And it not paying off. So there we are. Anything else worth looking at in there? No, that'll do that, I think. Yeah. Okay. I want to talk about El Nino, all right? Now, first of all, if you don't know what El Nino is, think of the tropical Pacific Ocean as like a giant solar-powered hot tub. So it's warm from the sun, yeah? And it's solar powered. In a normal year, strong trade winds blow from east to west, pushing sun-warmed surface water towards Asia and Australia. Okay? Sun-warmed surface water towards Asia and Australia. During an El Nino event, the atmospheric fan breaks down. So let's say there's a fan on this hot tub as well. Get it cool for people in there. The fan breaks down. The trade winds weaken or even reverse. Now, without those winds pushing it west, the massive pool of warm water sloshes back towards South America. Because the ocean dictates global weather patterns, moving that warm water shifts the rain clouds across the globe. It creates a massive domino effect, flipping the global weather script. Places that need rain get severe droughts, and places that need dry harvest seasons get flooded. Okay? So it flips everything, and it creates chaos. For, of course, farmers and anyone growing crops but in these areas. Now, the current email, I honestly implore you to go onto Google Alerts. It's very handy if you want to research something. Just go onto Google Alerts and type in El Nino and set an alert for that, okay? And you'll get a list of emails every day that mention the word El Nino. And I got one this morning, and there's been an update. I've been monitoring these. Now, according to the current status, El Nino is strengthening rapidly. The latest data from the World Meteorological Organization says El Nino has officially developed and is strengthening fast. Ocean temperatures are spiking. Water temperatures in the central and eastern Pacific are projected to jump more than 2 degrees centigrade above normal. Meteorology terms, that signals structurally a strong event. Now, the World Meteorological Organization don't use the word super. That's more the press and the media saying that. Super El Nino. So no, we don't use that. That's below us. We use technical terms. So they go from, you know, weak, moderate, strong, and I think very strong. And they're saying now anything above, you know, 2 degrees above the normal temperature, the average temperature, is strong. It's basically a super El Nino. I think the last one happened, was in 1950, maybe? No, it's been three since 1950. That's it. That's it. Three since 1950. The timeline. So the phenomenon will build rapidly through the summer and autumn, likely hitting its absolute peak intensity between November and February. Global heat wave. Because a strong El Nino releases an immense amount of ocean heat into the sky, meteorologists project an 80% chance of above normal temperatures across almost every populated continent over the next year. So you've got crop vulnerabilities here. Why your grocery bill is at risk. For agriculture, El Nino triggers serious supply shocks across several core regions. In India, Vietnam and Thailand, El Nino routinely weakens the vital summer monsoons. With steady rain, water-intensive crops like sugarcane and rice get severely stunted during their main growing phases. In Australia, eastern and northern parts of the country face a double whammy of severe drought and an elevated risk of wildfires, which damages pasture land for livestock and shrinks winter grain yields. In West Africa, regions like Côte d'Ivoire and Ghana face highly unpredictable rainfall and intense heat waves. When cocoa trees get choked by dry spells, pods shrink and harvests plummet. In the Americas, while Central America and Northern South America bake under the drought, parts of the southern United States and Brazil face unseasonal heavy downpours that flood fields and stall harvesting equipment. Okay, now, this will bring a lot of misery to many people around the world. I understand that. And it will also mean price inflation. So it's a miserable thing, miserable event. And so it does seem to be quite crass to be looking for investment opportunities. But as investors, that's what we're meant to do. It's, you know, being objective, almost cold-hearted, saying, okay, how can I almost protect myself, my portfolio, against this kind of exposure? And in doing so, you may get some decent upside. That's what an investor does, okay? I mean, we can sit there and say, this is awful, and not do anything about it. Or you can try and, you know, make some money out of this, because that's what an investor does, you know? I mean, without you investing or not, the price of these crops will go up, full stop. So, when extreme weather destroys crops, the global supply shrinks. But because people do not stop consuming food, demand stays exactly the same. Basic economics 101 tells us what happens next. Demand stays the same, supplies goes down, prices shoot up. For investors looking for a position, and this is like, do your own research, this is not investment advice, these are just ideas and just information being passed on. For investors looking to position a portfolio against these agricultural shocks, Wisdom Tree, and I bought three of these, I went a bit mad in the week, I did hold, as I mentioned, about a while back, Wisdom Tree Cocoa, but I have bought some more. So these are the other twos I've bought. So these are exchange-traded commodities. They trade exactly like the shares on a regular stock exchange, but track the prices of underlying agricultural futures, all right? So Wisdom Tree Sugar. S, ticker here is S-U-G-A. Sugar is dominated by two giants, Brazil and India. El Nino tends to bring excessive rain to Brazil, which floods fields, dilutes the sugar content in the cane, and clogs harvesting machinery. At the same time, it causes drought in India. The world's two largest suppliers face simultaneous production issues. Global sugarcane prices historically spike. Sugar tracks, sugar, that's S-U-G-A, tracks futures directly, allowing investors to capture that upward momentum. Second one, Wisdom Tree Coffee, ticker, C-O-F-F, cough. Coffee plants are notoriously sensitive. Robusta beans, using instant coffee and espresso are largely grown in Vietnam and Indonesia, where El Nino brings scorching, dry heat that bakes the crops. Meanwhile, Arabica beans in South America suffer from irregular rains that trigger premature flowering. Because coffee bushes take years to mature, you cannot just replant them overnight when a harvest fails, leading to prolonged price spikes that lift the value of the ETF, COFF, C-O-F-F. And finally, this is what I've mentioned before, WisdomTree ETC COCA. And the ticker there is COCO, COCO. Roughly 60% of the world's chocolate comes from just two West African nations, Ghana and Côte d'Ivoire. And you see there's a theme here. You know, the production of these crops, the majority of them come from, you know, just a couple of areas. And when those areas get hit, it affects the supply massively, of course. Anyway, the cocoa market is already notoriously tight and prone to supply deficits. If El Nino brings extended dry spells to West Africa, it ruins the mid-cropped harvest. Smaller pods mean less chocolate on the global market because the supply chain is so concentrated in one region. Any major weather disruption can send cocoa futures and the cocoa ETC into high volatile upward rally. So check those out. Quick warning though, these agricultural ETCs are excellent technical tools for trading short to medium term for weather trends. However, because they are future contracts, they can be highly volatile and generally best suited for active trading rather than long-term buy and hold portfolios. So we're not talking about holding these for like years. These are, you know, investment ideas that will last, you know, 6 months maximum, probably. 6 to 12 months, depending how bad El Nino is. But like I said, the peak of El Nino. And keep looking at those updates. If it looks like it's, you know, it's not going to be as bad as we thought, the prices may come down a bit. But if they keep coming out, as they have done, with warnings, this could be a super El Nino or a very strong El Nino, whereas, you know, temperatures of the ocean is 2 degrees above average, then the prices of these commodities could go up very, very quickly. But then, you know, the peak is between November and February. So I assume after, I don't know actually what will happen, because obviously there'll still be supply problems after that. That's when the weather kicks in, but there'll still be supply problems after that. So I just wonder how long it'll be. But what I'm saying is, this is not a kind of thing you hold for 5 years. You know, it's not a long-term hold. You know, it's generally 6 to 12 months, that's it. Okay, let's have a quick look at the website here. Look at the movers page. On the movers page, there's lots of metrics here. You look at companies done well over the last week, month, quarter, half year, year. You can look at the share price performance. You can look at 3 month highs, 6 month highs, 12 month highs. Recovery section, which is companies that have hit a 52-week low in the last 6 months, but are 20% up from that 52-week low. So they have momentum going forward. It looks like they've bottomed. Plus they have forecast potential. That means their revenue and profits forecast for the next couple of years look quite strong. So this is a company, maybe they've been technically oversold and it's worth a look. That's a recovery section. Low to high is similar, but it's about 52 low. Someone hit 52 high. Is that trending section? So loads of sections on there you can look at. Of course, the database, the Microcap League, significant news, calendar, webinar, everything on the website. And like I said, if you want to get discount, POD, P-O-D, 40. That's 40% off, and that's 40. That's P-O-D, 40. And just go to sharepickers.com to get that 40% off. Okay, let's look at the share price performance section of the website. And these are only companies sub 300 million market cap. Okay, is the pool of these companies around about 250 companies? And that's enough to get a no. You can get a no pretty much, you know, 200 companies or less after a while of learning to invest. And you can sort of, you know, the problem is with investing, having too many companies to look at. It's almost option paralysis, you know, and you can easily make bigger mistakes. If you narrow the pool down, but make it a quality pool, so profitable companies that are, you know, small caps that are, like I said, tracked on their growth and all that stuff, then you have a better quality pool to fish in, you know. Anyway, let's look at the week's performance. So first of all, the worst performance of the week, yeah, E-Energy dropped off a cliff, didn't it? I was wondering when that was going to drop because the founder, pretty much, and the CEO, Harvey, who I've interviewed a couple of times, just all of a sudden stepped down from the board. something went as going on there. In fact, what was the news out there? I think there was overzealous accounting, wasn't it? I think. Yes, sorry, on the 18th of May, Chief Executive Officer Harvey Sinclair stepped down with mutual agreement, with Chief Finance Officer John Guillaume assuming the role. So obviously, and they came out later with a board update, AGM, and they've revised down some figures. So you can draw your own conclusions there. Yeah, but anyway, that's of the week is down 13.79%. That's the worst performer. Second worst performer is Active Ops. They need to come up with results. I've always thought that was... I know there's software as a service and they're also growing the ARR, but I've always thought it was quite... You know, it's not cheap. In fact, if I click on the website here, so they had final results out for the year. Revenue's up 48%, which is very good, 45 million. But they did a loss before tax of 2 million, net loss of 2.3, and they were valued at 100. This is after, this is after the fall, 164 million. So even for next year, looking at the forecast, they look at 6% top line growth, which is not gangbusters, is it? And half a million profit, which puts them on a PE of 329, or an EV earnings, so they've got a bit of cash, say 23 million, of 281. I don't care what you're saying, you know. It's highly valued. That I mean, even if you look at a revenue multiple, it's still 3x sales, and they're literally barely profitable. So 51.4 million top line for 28. That's 8% growth. 2 million in net profit puts on a PE of 82. EV earnings are 70. I know some people say you've got to use different metrics for software companies and all that, but I don't care. I'm not paying that amount. On that, for companies like that. It's ridiculous. And it has, I think, it's finally... That's the trouble. When companies are highly rated like that and they come out with some results that are less than, you know, brilliant, which they need to be, of course, their stock takes a knock. Because they go, hang on, this is a bit highly rated, isn't it? You know, it's, revenue's gone up, but the profit's gone down. So it can be very volatile when they're highly priced. You know, people expect a lot. They're priced to perfection, pretty much. When they come out with anything less than perfect... they take a bit of a knock. Okay, what's this third worst performing stock? Pro Building Service Marketplace. I think there's something in that. So it's ActiveOps down 12.38. Keep an eye on those, okay? They're undergoing a transformation, but basically they're a marketplace now. They were HSS Hire, you know, but I think they've sold off that bit and give it to Speedy Hire. And now they've become a marketplace for everyone buying or selling tools, hiring tools, all that stuff. So it could be, you know, quite a high margin business once they get going. But as yet, they've had a few delays, things not running to plan, and so they're recent low. But I don't know. I'm quite interested in what they're doing. I mean, there's no evidence or proof yet they could be, you know, a standout performer. But I think there's maybe some potential. I like that. I like the idea of what they're doing. You know, okay. Top performers this week at three. In fact, of the top four, I hold two of them. So at four, Xerox Technologies, up 19.70%. I hold that. At three, S4 Capital, up 20%. I hold that. I do think that has the potential. Well, both of those two, actually. One's a bit more risky, Xerox is. But they have the potential to multi-bag if things go right for them. But like I said, business... It's not all always goes right, is it? If Xerox comes out with another agreement with a large, you know, wash machine OEM, I think it'll go to the moon, that stock. It's a huge market they're in. They've got very good technology. It's been a perennial loss maker and underperformed for years. It's delayed. And it's still maybe a story stock, but if it's already signed one deal with a large top 10 wash machine OEM. If it adds another one, literally, it's more than 10 bagger, that stock. Yeah, but it's highly risky because they're loss making at the moment. They are forecast to be profitable in 2 years, I think. But yeah, and S4 Capital are turning it around. They've realised now that they're getting rid of the debt. They're right-sizing the business by reducing the workforce. And they have some massive clients. And they've really transformed the way advertising companies, digital-only advertising companies, work. They've, you know, using not billable hours, but AI and work completed model. And like I said, the clients they have to die for. And I don't think there's any other company that size, or sub 300 million, on the market with clients like, you know, Google, Facebook, BMW, all these. They're the biggest who's who of clients. So yeah, so that's up 20%. Tiny Build. It's about time. I mean, one of the gaming companies that hasn't sort of re-rated positively, but it's starting to move now, which is Tiny Build, up 22%. And from an oversold position, so technically, you know, oversold Hercules, which of course is the workforce recruiter within the construction fields, up 23.4%. Okay, and finally, I'm going to talk about a company I hold. Except whenever I mention a company I hold, then please, you know, treat it as subjective, because I hold the company. And of course, it's impossible not to be a bit biased when you hold a company. When you have skin in the game, of course, you're going to look at a company a bit more favourably because you're involved with it. You know, you're backing it pretty much. And you wouldn't be holding it if you didn't, back it. So anyway, I'm going to talk about Brave Bison. Many, many years ago, I held Brave Bison, and I thought it could be something, but it wasn't really going anywhere. And then there was a change of management. In fact, Tangent Communications, or Tangent Media it was, in which Ollie Green was the CEO, started taking a big chunk of Brave Bison. And then he came on the board, and then he became interim chairman, and then he became CEO. And it really started moving. So, and if you want a masterclass, right, in how to take a struggling sort of AIM micro cap and transform it into a highly profitable digital powerhouse, you need look no further than Brave Bison. Back in 2020, before the Green brothers, this is Ollie Green and Theo Green. Ollie's the chairman, I think, and Theo is the CTO. They stepped in 2020. This was a loss-making social video business, pulling in just about $4 million in net revenue. That's it. $4 million. Today, the business has scaled more than eightfold, guiding the market towards consensus expectations of $45 million in revenue and $9.4 million in adjusted EBITDA for the current financial year. Operationally, Executive Chair Ollie Green has executed a hyper-disciplined buy-and-build strategy, completing five major acquisitions to assemble a unified digital media technology and insights network. So they've really expanded all parts of the business, and they've been very clever deals. And I think that's, you know, I mean, in fact, you know, you can think of, you can't talk about Ollie and Theo without looking at the lineage, right? Their father is Michael Green. I remember interviewing Ollie and then actually doing a background search and thinking, I like this guy, he's very interesting. And I saw that he was, you know, a Chelsea sort of set and just smart pictures on social media. Then I looked back and saw, oh, Michael Green, his father. And I didn't know who Michael Green was. I read about him. But he is a legendary media mogul who built Carlton Communications into a dominant force that eventually formed ITV. Yes. So, and if you read about his story, he literally became a millionaire at 21. So it's almost like this is in their DNA, you know, this kind of business building. You know, it's from their father. They know exactly, they've exactly got the same traits. Looking at how the brothers have systematically consolidated and fragmented digital agency space, it's clear they've inherited their dad's sharp corporate DNA, you know? They aren't just buying agencies for the sake of scale. They are buying structurally projected and protected, highly complementary businesses, cutting duplicate overheads and cross-selling capabilities across a blue-chip roster. So let's look at, they've done five deals. Let's look at three deals they've done, for example, recently, okay? The fifth, number one, they acquired in a highly strategic deal that brought a global media giant, News Corp, into Brave Bison share register as a meaningful minority shareholder. It instantly gave them higher-tier influencer marketing credentials while aligning them with one of the most powerful media networks on earth. It's an amazing deal. they structure the deal very cleverly. They pay very little up front, or as little as they have to, and then everything is performance related, to the point where if the performance targets are hit, the deals pay for themselves. It doesn't really come out of the parent company at all. It pays for itself. Very clever the way Ollie is structuring it. I'm sure he's had a bit of coaching advice from his father, but it's working. Number two, Mini MBA, bought for $19 million. This online marketing education platform founded by Professor Mark Ritson is a stroke of financial genius. He's highly regarded, Mark Ritson. It shifts Brave Bison away from pure agency service hours and introduces highly predictable, high-margin B2B recurring digital revenues, upskilling thousands of corporate marketeers globally every year. And Mark Ritson, okay, actually bought into the placing. So they did a placing to buy this company, and Mark Ritson, I think, put 2 million quid in, and then afterwards exercised options for another 2 million. So he is now a major stakeholder in Brave Bison as well as News Corp, which of course is Rupert Murdoch's empire. So you've got two, it's pretty clever. Listen to MTM London. They acquired this for 12 million. This strategy and insights consultancy works with titans like Google, Amazon, Spotify. Why is this shrewd? It allows Brave Bison to catch clients upstream. Instead of just executing media campaigns, they now advise global tech firms on commercial strategy and audience insights before the marketing dollars are even allocated. And that was the company where they literally did that deal, structured it to the point where it didn't cost Brave Bison anything. If that MTM hits its targets, performance targets, doesn't cost them anything, makes some money. This was clever as well. I was looking for a while. Of course, it's a microcap, it's profitable, so it was on my radar. System One, SYS1 is the company. This was a very strange but very clever chess move, this. And I thought, how did that happen? They acquired 28% strategic acquisition in System One Group, right? Instead of overpaying for 100% takeover, Ollie Green structured a share-for-share exchange, acquiring the bulk stake directly from System One's founder, John Kieran. What? What makes this special is the founder alignment. Kieran didn't just cash out, he rolled his ownership into Brave Bison equity, effectively tying his long-term success to the Green Brothers. So basically saying, he was working at System One, the founder. He's basically saying, I have more faith in Brave Bison helping System One perform well than System One itself. I like the tech because he created it, but I think the people who are really going to drive this company are Brave Bison. So I wouldn't be surprised if they acquire a bit more stock there. By gaining a formal board observer seat on System One, Brave Bison now can offer evidence-based creative using System One's behavioral data platforms to prove an ad will work before Social Chain or The Fifth even runs it. That's another company they acquired, by the way, Social Chain, Stephen Bartlett on Dragon's Den. They bought it for $7.7 million when the parent company, I think they bought the US-UK arm of that, but the parent company, AG, Social Chain AG, based in Germany, was in trouble, and they quickly swooped in and pulled out Social Chain UK-US for $7.7 million. I think it's, didn't Stephen Bartlett sell it close to $300 million, I think. So that was a heck of a deal. Again, they saw there was employees with tech there that they liked, and they just swooped in and nicked it, pretty much. So, does this story still have a long way to go? First, the alignment is like ironclad. High-profile insiders like Mark Ritson, Professor Mark Ritson, have their shares locked into mid-2027, meaning the architects of their highest margin divisions are incentivized to stay and scale. Second, the balance sheet is highly defensive. Even after an aggressive acquisition streak, they hold millions in net cash and are on track to completely clear their bank debt ahead of schedule. That was another impressive announcement. Thirdly, as free cash flow balloons in the second half of the year, Brave Bison is perfectly positioned to hunt for more discounted bolt-on acquisitions. The Green Brothers are building a modern marketing empire block by block here, and the market is only just starting to wake up. So keep your eyes on Brave Bison. I think it has a long way to go, and these guys are now, as these flywheels, as these businesses all kick in, start generating cash, it's easier for them to raise the money to acquire good businesses. And with Ollie Green at the helm and Theo, they're acquiring these businesses with very clever deal structures. And that's the mark of a good businessman, you know, doing good deals. So keep an eye on Brave Bison. Like I said, it's not investment advice. It's just an. I genuinely think if I was uber bullish here, I think these guys have massive ambitions to become, you know, mid cap company. And so you're talking, I'm mid cap talking sort of, you know, half a billion or a billion plus in market cap. Right now, it's a tenth of that. So I think, you know. Keep your eye out on Brave Bison, shrewd operators. Like I said, they've got, you know, very shrewd corporate DNA from their father. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Hope you're well. Have a nice weekend. Good luck to England tomorrow. I will not be waking up to that. Watch that. But the odds are stacked against them. Be nice if they can overthrow those odds. Because I think it's that the Mexico have only won, lost two or three games in the Azteca Stadium, which is 7,000 feet above sea level. So it's going to be hard for England to breathe very well compared to Mexicans who are used to it. But good luck. If they did do it, it'd be amazing. I turn around that day. But anyway, don't forget, POD40, POD40, if you want 40% off the Sharepickers Investment Club, only available until the end of July, then go to sharepickers.com. If you have any issues or can't work it out, just email me, justin@sharepickers.com. Thanks for listening. Have a nice weekend. Speaking next week. Muchos apreciados.
The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The contents of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.